Welcome back to another episode of If I Go Missing. I never thought I would say that again.
Yeah, I kind of thought the podcasting was over. I never thought we'd do it again.
I did too, and here we are. We noticed you guys were still listening to our stories, so we decided we finally had time to make some more for you. So here we are. I'm Megan.
And I'm Lynn. Today, we're talking about Lawrence Berrier.
Lawrence Berrier was a 20-year-old sophomore at Indiana University in Bloomington. She was originally from Scarsdale, New York, and it was the end of the semester, and Lauren, who was majoring in textiles merchandising, along with some of her friends, were ready to blow off some steam. It should have been like so many weekends before, but on this morning, Lauren would leave the company of her friends and walk off alone in the direction of her apartment, never to be seen again.
Indiana University is in Bloomington. It is a big school with big pride. Due to the size of the school, it's no surprise that Bloomington is known as a party town. At 4'11", Lauren was a slender co-ed and attractive with blue eyes and blonde hair. Lauren's parents were proud of her decisions to continue her education and supported her in her move to Bloomington.
On June 3rd, 2011, Lauren Berrier disappeared and has not been seen or heard from since. Lauren left her apartment at the Smallwood apartment building around 12:30 a.m. On the evening in question, she was wearing a white blouse and black leggings. She's accompanied by David Roan, another IU student from her building. The two go to 5 North Townhomes, just a few blocks away from Smallwood, to hang out with a friend, Jay Rosenbaum, who lived there. At Jay's, Lauren met up with Corey Rossman and Mike Beth. Mike and Corey were roommates and lived only a couple of doors down from Jay. Their plans were to pregame there before heading out to the bars. A quick little bit on David Roan. He is from Manhattan. He has attended the exclusive Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School on the Upper West Side. As far as I've been able to figure out, this is the first time Lauren has met Mike. In a relatively short amount of time, Lauren becomes comfortable with Corey, though. Corey Rossman attended high school in an affluent Boston suburb. According to Lauren's parents, Rossman became friendly with Lauren a few days earlier while the two were at the Indianapolis 500. On that June night, both Lauren and Corey leave Jay Rosenbaum's apartment at 1:30 a.m. in order to walk to Kilroy Sports Bar.
Kilroy Sports Bar was their destination, with two levels, multiple bars, throbbing music, and a large outdoor patio. It's frequented by well-heeled IU students, many from the East Coast who live in the Lux, recently built apartments northwest of downtown, including Smallwood Plaza at 9th Street and College Avenue, and 5 North Townhomes at 11th and Morton Streets. Kilroy's is now called Kilroy's Recess. The bar is the only 18 and over club in Bloomington. The bar is only allowed to serve alcohol to patrons 21 and over. It is important to note that Lauren was only 20 at the time of her disappearance. It was likely that she had a fake ID, and the bar got sloppier with checking IDs with the later it was.
Corey and Lauren stay at Kilroy's for about 45 minutes after arriving at 1:46 a.m., just long enough for Lauren to take off her shoes and lose her phone. Upon leaving the bar, Corey and Lauren walk back to her apartment at Smallwood. They enter the building at about 2:30 and exit the building at 2:42 a.m. During their time in the building, an altercation is caught on security footage on the 5th floor, the same floor that Lauren lives on. The footage shows Corey and Zach Oakes getting into a dispute. Zach ends up punching Corey. Corey later states that the punch causes him to be unable to remember anything from that night after being at Kilroy's Sports Bar. Zach claims that the altercation occurred when he voiced his concern over the way Corey was treating Lauren. And it's important to note that Zach is actually friends with Jesse Wolf, who was Lauren's boyfriend at the time. Jesse just did not go out with Lauren that night because he stayed home to watch Game 2 of the NBA playoffs. Following this altercation, for some reason unknown to us, Corey and Lauren decide to go back to his place instead of staying at her apartment. Lauren then exits Smallwood through the front door still without having gone to her apartment or putting on another pair of shoes. Between 2:48 and 2:51 a.m., security cameras catch footage of Corey and Lauren walking down an alley to his place. During this walk, it is said that Lauren fell multiple times, and eventually, Corey picked her up in a fireman's carry. Also during this time at 2:51 a.m., Lauren is captured on video for the last time walking out of the alley near Smallwood and into an empty lot by 5 North. She shows up on another camera moments before with someone the police won't name. Upon arriving at his townhouse that he shared with Mike Beth, Corey puked while trying to go up the stairs to his room, and according to Beth, Lauren was conscious but visibly intoxicated. He put Corey to bed and returned to Lauren. Mike then decided that he really just met Lauren that day, and he really didn't know her well enough to babysit her when she wanted to leave, so he let her go. He decided to take her back to Jay Rosenbaum's townhome since Jay was their mutual friend and had known Lauren since high school. At 4:30, Jay Rosenbaum states that he watched Lauren walk down the block, still barefoot, without her phone, her keys, or her ID. This was the last time she was ever seen.
The next morning, Lauren's boyfriend, Jesse, began trying to contact her and eventually ended up realizing that Lauren's phone was left at Kilroy's. By June 4th, Lauren's parents, Rob and Charlene, arrive in Bloomington in hopes of finding Lauren. Lauren had a heart condition called long QT syndrome. Without medication, it could be fatal. So, during the first few days of the search for Lauren, her parents were desperate to find her so that she would have her medication that had been left at her apartment. In the week immediately following Spurrier's disappearance, rewards are offered for her return. Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, offered $10,000 for her safe return. Her parents put up a reward of $100,000 for information leading to their daughter's return. Since the beginning of the investigation, Bloomington police have received over 3,500 tips regarding Lauren's disappearance. During the searches for Lauren, both her keys and purse were found along the same route that Lauren and Corey took from her apartment back to the one Mike and Jay shared.
From the beginning, Spurrier's parents believed that the group of friends Lauren was hanging out with that night knew more than they were telling police. Four of the men that hung out with Lauren that night lawyered up quickly. Lauren's boyfriend, Jesse Wolf, helped search for Lauren for 2 days, then he obtained legal counsel. It is important, though, to keep in mind that getting an attorney is not supposed to be seen as a sign of guilt in the United States justice system. In fact, many individuals that were with Lauren the night of her disappearance were uncooperative with the Bloomington police. None of the men have submitted a polygraph test by the department and refused to give statements. All statements have been given via attorneys only. As the investigation into Lauren's disappearance went deeper, police and Lauren's parents learned about her wild side. While searching Lauren's apartment, police found cocaine. Lauren also had been picked up on a public intoxication charge in the past. During this time, Jesse Wolf's mother also claimed that Lauren had been thrown out of summer camp for drug possession. However, I can't find anything to corroborate this.
Bloomington has released a clip from security footage from the night Lauren disappeared. Police released a photo of a truck that was seen driving around the block where Lauren was last seen by security cameras. This truck produced numerous leads, but was later written off by the police. The owner of the truck came forward and was able to sufficiently explain why he was in the area. As far as the guys she was last known to be around, they have been looked into as much as was possible. Jay Rosenbaum is a self-proclaimed last person to see Lauren Spurrier. His defense attorney is James Boyles. He has taken a privately administered polygraph that he passed, which has been provided to the Bloomington Police Department. He refuses to speak directly to Lauren's parents. Jesse Wolf, Lauren's long-term boyfriend, is also considered a person of interest. Though he was not present that night with Lauren, he is someone important in her life that police can neither prove nor disprove his alibi. Had his friends that encountered Spurrier and Roseman at her building contacted him about her being drunk and in the company of another man? Jesse's parents have given numerous statements. They claim that their son had completed a polygraph, but would not comply with Bloomington police to take one. They claim that the Bloomington Police Department was not competent. His parents claim that Lauren's parents continue to spread lies about their son, and the only reason she is dead is her own drug abuse. Again, this is not proven. It is just their opinion. Corey Rossman, the man that Lauren spent most of the time with that evening, obtained a lawyer shortly after her disappearance. The attorney, Carl Salzman, issued a statement saying that Corey had no memory of the evening after leaving Kilroy's. In an interview 2 years after Lauren's disappearance, he claims that he and Lauren's other friends were victims due to the trial in the media that they have faced. He states that he has cooperated to his best of his ability. Mike Beth has only been discussed minimally in the news following the immediate tie surrounding Lauren's disappearance. He obtained a lawyer shortly after the search began.
Outside of theories that anyone that Lauren was with that night harmed her, there's always the chance that somebody abducted her off the street. I mean, she was like 90 pounds, barefoot, intoxicated. She could have been snatched very quickly. There was also sex offenders and the person who would become the 2015 killer of another IU student, Hannah Wilson, around the area. So you've got a sex offender and a future murderer in the area. So the random abduction theory is not seen as likely, but it's still probable. Hannah Wilson was a girl around Lauren's age who was found dead around the same time as Lauren disappeared. Hannah's mother believes there's a possibility that her daughter's killer, Daniel Messel, could be responsible for Lauren's disappearance. This theory has been largely written off, though, due to the critical errors that were made by Messel and Hannah's murder. Police later dismissed the case as having any similarity to Lauren's case. However, any other friend or acquaintance may have picked her up as she was walking home. Another theory is that Lauren had been purchasing illegal drugs from a motorcycle 1% gang called the Sons of Silence. It was believed that she could have been killed for a debt that she owed, but personally I find this theory very unlikely. One really popular theory is that Lauren overdosed. Many witnesses have stated that Lauren had been doing illegal drugs that night. Pairing this with her heart condition, it would be easy for her to overdose. An inmate once gave a tip that his cellmate had gone to school with the men who were last to see Lauren. The tipster claimed that they got scared when she overdosed and decided to dump her body into the Ohio River.
Wouldn't that have come up, though, because you're eventually going to, like, wash ashore? Just being dumped in a river, kind of?
I mean, just dumped in a river? No, you would rise to the surface. But, I mean, there are ways, I guess, they could weigh your body down.
Oh, totally, yeah.
So, with those, I don't know if that makes the possibility more likely.
Yeah.
I definitely say it's probably one of the more likely theories, though.
Okay.
Just because I don't trust the guy she was with that night. Something seems fishy with him.
There's a lot of drugs and alcohol involved. And when that's going on, people want to start kind of finding ways to cover things up, you know? So I don't look guilty because I was doing drugs or because I was, you know.
Yeah. And it just, they're definitely not telling the whole truth. Whatever occurred that night, no one that knows anything is telling. Even after 12 long years, Lauren Spierer's mother, Charlene, once said at a press conference that perhaps it was some terrible accident that had happened to her daughter and that she could deal with. However, what she cannot deal with is the unknown.
In 2013, Rob and Charlene Spierer filed a lawsuit against the three men who were the last to see Lauren alive. Their attorney for this case stated that they didn't want to file a case, but were nearing a litigation deadline. The claim was that the men in question were aware that Lauren was intoxicated to a point where she was unable to care for herself, and they didn't practice due diligence in making sure she returned home. The case was moved to the federal court since the defendants no longer resided in Indiana. Later, the case was thrown out by the judge. But I was thinking the same thing. The guy didn't know her that well, So he just sort of let her go. I'm like, dude, you know she can't take care of herself. Why would you just let her go?
Yeah, I think that's one part of the story that's never made sense to me.
No, it makes no sense whatsoever. You're just going to let this little bitty girl go out there intoxicated, unable to take care of herself, no shoes, no cell phone to call somebody, nothing. She'll get home. Really? How? I mean, come on. That's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally, totally agree with, you know, pursuing that.
I can see being like, look, I'm not going to sit here and babysit you, but I will put you in my car and drive you to your apartment and mm-hmm. get you inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, guess she didn't have her purse, so she didn't have any keys.
Then make her stay there. I don't know. Something doesn't add up there.
Yeah, no, I don't. He wanted to get the situation off of his hands a little too quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that. Her parents don't believe that Lauren was a victim of a random abduction. Instead, they feel as if the last people who saw Lauren are refusing to give the police critical information that would lead to knowing where and what really happened. The same year that Rob and Charlene filed their lawsuit was the year that Lauren would have been graduating from IU. Her parents did not attend commencement. Lauren was not left out of the ceremony. During speeches, speakers tried to renew the search for Lauren by reminding those in attendance to search, keep searching. Rob and Charlene no longer believe that Lauren is alive. They have come to terms with the fact that they are searching for her remains. Their only hope is that they will be able to give her a proper burial.
Every year on the anniversary of her disappearance, Lauren's story gets another push in the national news. Anyone with information is asked to call the Bloomington Police Department at 812-339-4477.